This podcast contains explicit language. Viewer discretion is advised.
He got the shot off! Throw it!
He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk.
Here we go.
Bang it up!
You're listening to the Benchwarmers and Burners podcast with your host, Josh Lozano.
Oh, shit. Here we go again.
Yo, and welcome back to another episode of the Benchwarmers and Burners podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lozano, part of the Belly Up Sports Network. Feels good to be back. Got the boys in the lab. We're going to be talking a little bit about hoops. First, got to introduce him because he's kind of seniority and a veteran on the show. Got my boy Mo. He's in the boot right now. He's on injured reserve, IR, part of the Up in Flames podcast and part of the really great network you should check out, Off the Ball Network. How you doing, Mo?
Hey, Josh, I'm doing good. I like the introduction, but yeah, I'm glad to be back on your show. You know, it's always great being on your show, man. You do have one of the dopest shows out, so I definitely always check them out, and I love to be a guest on yours, so I appreciate you for having me come on.
Hey, appreciate that. And the next guest, we haven't had him on the show before, Kieran Pruitt. He's a co-host of the Wild Card podcast, also part of the Off the Ball. He has some great content. I'll be posting Mo and Kieran's social media links down below, so you should definitely go check that out. But how you doing, my man?
I'm good. How are you guys? Glad to be here.
Love that. So we're just going to get right into it. We're talking a little bit about the NBA draft. I kind of want to get your guys' opinion on this. Some people are saying this is like the ugly stepchild of the NBA draft because they're saying, oh, the one before that, you know, was pretty solid. And then the one after that is, but this one is kind of like the tweener. I don't know if maybe people are just giving, you know, saying that because this is, you know, the pandemic year. So everything's a little bit weird. But I kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts, especially about the type of players involved. There's only one way that we can introduce this by talking about the draft, but Mo, you're up, man. What do you think of this draft class?
You know, until recently, I really haven't been the biggest as far as all these draft prospects. Actually, a lot of guys I've been talking to, you know, Karen being in the chat and things like that are breaking down these draft guys has got me like really into it. And so I've really been looking at players, kind of watching highlights, little film videos and things like that. And I don't think this draft class is as weak as everybody thinks. I do think it has a lot to do with the pandemic. And not being able to see the NCAA tournament is, you know, I feel like there was not as big an interest in college basketball this year anyway, because it did seem a little bit weaker. Your dominating teams were a little bit weaker. It's always tough to watch college basketball when, you know, your perennial powerhouses, North Carolina isn't that good this year. Syracuse is nothing but maybe above average this year. So, you know, you even had Ohio State ranked in the top 10 at some point, and they're not typically a powerhouse that's ranked inside the top 10. I loved it being a Buckeyes fan, but, you know, you seen your, like, Michigan State's bouncing and out of the top five and then drop and, you know, rise back up again. So I think it was just a weird year for college basketball. And it was like an in-between the year. You lost a lot of talent. The NBA got real entertaining right before the shutdown also. So I think this has everything to do with not watching the NCAA tournament. And because some of these guys, a lot of these guys, I think would have made, you know, solidified names for themselves come the conference championships and the NCAA tournament. And so I think a lot of people are just like, oh, it's not so much talent in this draft and things like that. These are kind of plug players. Nobody really, maybe outside the top five, everybody's kind of like their plug players, maybe have longevity, little 10-year careers. You don't really have too many superstars. But I think this is a really talented draft. I think you're going to find a lot of talent whose names are going to be around for the next 10 to 12 years a lot later in the draft. And maybe they do become nothing but, you know, solid bench players, solid role players, you know, your fourth or fifth best option on your team. But the way it's going now, you have big threes, and then your next, you have dynamic duos and big threes, and your next two to three guys after that are the most important guys on the team other than your stars. And I do think this year's draft, you're going to have a lot of those guys who are going to be very important players in the next 4 to 5 years to go along those dynamic duos and big threes. So I think there's a lot of talent in this draft, but, you know, we'll start getting into names and stuff and a little bit of who I think is going to be a surprise and sleeper picks and things like that. But I do think this is a very talented draft. I just don't think it's star heavy because a lot of these guys weren't stars in college. So we're not used to the names with all the high school mixtapes and social media stars and viral, you know, highlights. It's not what we're accustomed to over the past few years. So, but I do think this is a very talented draft.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, especially because it is a little bit weird because you just don't get that. You can only watch so much footage until you need new one, if that makes any sense. You can only watch the same type of highlights so many times. But what about you, Kieran? What's your thoughts so far on this draft? Oh, wait. Now, up to talk about the NBA draft. What's your thoughts, Kieran?
I agree a lot with what Mo was saying, how I don't think this draft class is as top heavy, but I think it can be a lot deeper than a lot of most drafts. You're going to find a lot of guys mm-hmm. that contribute late in the season. A lot of times you get rookies that you come in and they either you don't sign them right away or mm-hmm. they kind of just sit behind that backup player, they play that third string, second string. I think you get a lot of guys that are kind of that that role player off the bench this year, but where we don't have as much of these rookies coming in and being all-star candidates, kind of like you had Trae Young and Luka their rookie year, where they weren't really all-stars, but people were kind of putting them in the question, considering it. I don't think we have as many of those guys, but I think we have a lot of guys who come in and they contribute heavy off the bench, and they make an impact for their teams doing a lot of the little things. I don't, maybe a couple guys can come in and be huge impact starters, Ja Morant type players right off the bench for their franchises, but I'm really excited to see who those mid to late first rounders and those second rounders, who they get picked up, because it's going to be super interesting to see all the different types of guys that come in. When you look at people's draft boards, there's 80 guys, 90 guys that kind of show up consistently on depending on whose draft board it is. And so when you only get 60 some picks or whatever, there's going to be a lot of guys who possibly get signed post draft. And that might be where the interesting sleepers are found, is undrafted free agents coming out of their schools.
Yeah, that's you bring up a good point too, which is interesting because there's such a misconception, and we're a society that just demands something like instantaneous gratification, if that makes any sense. Like Ja, see Ja and we just assume why can't every point guard process the game that fast? You know, why can't every rookie just come out there? I heard that, and then we see that it takes guys sometimes maybe like a year or two to really develop, because now I remember the argument was Jason Tatum was miles, miles ahead of Jaylen Brown. Now, when you look at them both at the bubble, you're like, wow, that gap's a lot closer than what we might've thought a couple years ago. And especially too with a lot of these young guys that you see, I think that it does take time. And all three of us understand, because we follow the league religiously and habitually, that there you can get some really, really good guys in the mid to late picks. You don't have to get a top three pick to get a superstar. Oftentimes than not, usually those top three picks don't end up being the superstars in those draft class. Maybe one out of those three, you know? But then that's only 33%. So I think you guys are all right. I'm hoping. I can't really plant my flag because I haven't been following this draft class as religiously as I should. I just hear the typical stereotypes of, you know, oh, LaMelo, he's a, you know, good offensive guy, but super sloppy mechanics, extremely undisciplined, but you don't have to worry because he's confident and at least he's got length for defense, that kind of stuff, you know? But I haven't really, like, dived in and looked at what type of fits. So for you guys, before we really start breaking down these players, what is the ideal situations for your favorite guys to go to? Like, maybe you have to do a little bit of, like, gerrymandering or, like, you know, rigging. Or, like, oh, I really think, you know, Wiseman's great, but I want him to fall to 4 or 3 because X, Y, Z. So,
to be honest, like, I have a weird take on this draft class.
Yeah.
So, like I think the player I'm most concerned about, there's two. And it's one who's, like, a household name, kind of. He was a household name going into college. And that's Cole Anthony. I'm real big on Cole Anthony, and I know he was injured last year, and what we seen from him though when he was healthy was I think we seen a bona fide basketball player. And I think Cole Anthony is going to be, I don't want to use the word great and just throw great around, but I think he's going to be a very good NBA player. And I think he's going to be very impactful. Maybe not his rookie year, unless he goes to the ideal situation, but you know, maybe like his second or third year, I think you're going to start getting that like De'Aaron Fox kind of improvement from him year in, year out. He's getting better. He's getting better. Well, you know, it's to the point De'Aaron Fox is a borderline all-star player. Like he didn't make the all-star game, but he's very well a borderline. We won't be surprised if he makes the all-star game next 100%. Year. We won't be surprised if he makes them, you know, three of the next 5 years is an all-star. So I think Cole Anthony can more so be that type of guys as far as improvement goes. I don't think he's De'Aaron Fox as far as a player comp, but I do mm-hmm. think as far as, you know, the improvement and what you can see from him, I think Cole Anthony, my other favorite player in this draft, and a lot of people would probably wonder why, I'm a Cassius Winston fan. I think Cassius Winston, I think to me, I have him on my board as far as like, he's the biggest sleeper. I think, just because I think with him playing multiple years in college, I think he's going to bring some leadership, you know, early. And that's kind of what you don't have from a lot of these guys. You got a lot of one-year guys that are 18, 19 years old at the oldest for majority of this draft class, where, you know, you have a lot of one-and-dones and overseas guys who are 18, 19 years old. We have Cassius Winston. I think he's 20, maybe 21. And, you know, that year or two, you know, those 3 to 4 years in college, it does make a difference. So I think Cassius Winston, and to throw a name of where I'd like to see him at, I think a guy like Cassius Winston, just the way his game is, his leadership, and he has some dog in him, I really think Cassius Winston will fit late in the first round or like as a second round pick. I think he'd fit in Miami. I think he would fit that culture. A little bit of bias. I am a Heat fan, but I think he would fit that culture. And I think he could become like, I know we got Kendrick Nunn, but maybe we don't re-sign Goran Dragic and we're looking for another point guard to come off that bench. And I think Cassius Winston has the game and could be that guy to come off the bench. And maybe, you know, like Kieran said, be our third option at point guard for his first year or two. But, you know, in the next couple of years, ultimately either be better than Kendrick Nunn and be our starting point guard, or at least be the backup and be the point guard for the second rotation. So I'm a big fan of Cassius Winston. I'd like to see him go to Miami. If I could put where I'd like to see Cole Anthony go and really fit and flourish, it's weird, but I'd like to see Cole Anthony in New Orleans. Like, I think I could see him in New Orleans because I think he's another guy. His rookie year, his second year, he would have a chance of coming off the bench, being the backup to Lonzo at point guard, but he would bring something different to New Orleans as far as a point guard. Cause to me, Lonzo's not the greatest scorer, but he's a great facilitator. He plays defense. He'll get you rebounds. You know, he does everything else. And Cole Anthony, I think, will complement Lonzo coming off the bench when Lonzo's out. Okay, we don't have that playmaking ability for other guys, but we have that playmaker who could get a shot on his own. So I think Cole Anthony will fit in New Orleans. And I haven't heard too many people say that. So I don't know if that'll just be me on an island by myself, but I'd like to see Cole Anthony in New Orleans. I'd like to see Cassius Winston come to the Miami Heat.
Well, so that's interesting because a lot of places I see Cole Anthony, they're saying he's like around the 20th pick of the draft. New Orleans, it looks like that they would have to either trade down because they got the 13th pick. That would be pretty interesting. We'll see. I know David Griffin, he likes to pull stuff out of his ass anyway, so we'll see.
Yeah,
he's a guy who loves doing trades, but I've seen Cole Anthony linked to Philadelphia a lot for some reason, saying that they're in a win now mode. So that's one.
That would be a good fit coming behind Ben Simmons too. That would be actually another fit because Ben Simmons is like a superstar Lonzo Ball. Like he's 6'10", Lonzo 6'7", but like Ben Simmons and them, they have the same type of game as far as they can't shoot. They're great facilitators, great defenders, and can do everything else so well that you give them a pass a little bit on shooting, but it comes to a point we need production from Lonzo and Ben Simmons as far as shooting the ball. But I do think Cole Anthony could play behind and complement them as their backup, both of those players, really well. So I could see him in Philly too. That wouldn't be a bad pick.
Here, before I let you go, I got to say, because we brought up Lonzo and Simmons, it's funny because Ben Simmons basically does everything Lonzo does great. The only thing that really Lonzo has over Ben Simmons is he's just not afraid to shoot threes. And it's like...
he's not afraid. That's the only difference, though.
If he just didn't have that fear of failure that Lonzo had, oh man, Ben Simmons would be phenomenal. But what about you, Karen? What's some of your ideal landing spots? It doesn't even matter about like draft projections. You just see a guy and you're like, that guy would fit for that team.
I was actually thinking a lot of the along the lines of Mo, but kind of, I don't know if this is a homer pick because I'm from Oregon, but I think Peyton Pritchard is way lower than most people are on people's draft picks for a lot of the same reason you like Cassius Winston. He's a Pac-12 player of the year. He Final Fours. I think he's a winner for sure. So I was thinking kind of the same reasons you were saying Cassius to Philly. I was thinking Peyton to Philly. I think he's a knockdown shooter. He's gonna play defense. He's gonna facilitate the ball. I think he's that second point guard on that team. Get stuff like that. I was also looking at not just Philly, but I like him kind of in Boston too. Boston's got that 30th pick late first round. Mm-hmm. That's kind of around where people are having him fall. But I see him being that second pick behind it's Kemba in Boston right now, right? And I see he doesn't need to score, but he can. But I see him facilitating, getting Jalen and Jason shots, being a leader, even as a rookie. I just like that that work ethic. I see him working out. I love his game. I like the comparison though Mo's making of Cassius in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. That's a good comparison. I like that. I hadn't heard that before, but I'm on board now. So you've got me hooked there.
I know. Okay. You got me buying some stock on that. One thing, yeah. I actually really like Peyton Pritchard. He's one of the few guys that I actually know about, especially because UNLV Mountain West, so you know a little bit more of the West Coast Pac-12 Mountain West kind of guys, mm-hmm. just because that's just the type of games you watch. And anyone who Googles, if you don't know who Peyton Pritchard is, just Google him. And then as soon as you see him, the first thing you think is, yeah, Danny Ainge will definitely use a pick on this guy. That is definitely Danny Ainge territory.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, that's...
It's a stereotype for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For me, since you guys are, the deep draft experts and you guys went with the mid-round picks, I'm just going to be a bum and just go up with the higher picks here. My guy... That I would think that would just be very interesting to find the perfect fit for, which I don't think would happen, but I know a lot of people would say, and I just don't think that they would a win now team like the Golden State Warriors would get somebody like LaMelo Ball, and there would just be a logjam there. But my thing with him is I think a lot of the issues that he has can be fixed if you just give him a couple seasons with Steph Curry and Klay. And I think after that, the potential for him would just be ridiculous. I don't see the Golden State doing that. I personally think that they'll probably trade that pick and probably somehow ship Wiggins too to try and get a complimentary player to win now. I just don't see the situation. Because none of these guys on this list is... I know people like to do the comparison of, the Spurs, David Robinson, he was out a year, they got Tim Duncan, came back, win the championship. Like, yeah, but none of these guys are Timmy D status to me, So
right.
That's what I definitely see doing it. Another one that I think that would be pretty interesting to see is if OB falls to the Knicks. I think that would be perfect. I think that he would just be able to go on there, and I just see him being able to just get a decent amount of playing time. But also, you always say one thing with the Knicks, and then they do the complete opposite, because then they got guys like Frank Ntilikina, who you're just like, why is he not getting more minutes? So
yeah, that's true.
I don't know if I would want to send him to the Knicks, but all right. So now I got to ask you guys, to you, who's your guys' consensus number one, number two, number three in this draft? Like, if you guys, you're like, ooh, this is how I had to put an order. Not even just by draft or fit. You're just saying best player available, one, two, three.
I have to go. So my top three would be Anthony Edwards, one, James Wiseman, two, LaMelo mm-hmm. Ball, three. I think I feel like those three might be one, two, and three. I know they're falling down. I know mm-hmm. LaMelo's falling down on people's boards. But as far as just talent and potential, I'd have to go Anthony Edwards one. He was a guy I actually caught a lot of. I watched a lot of Georgia games solely to watch Anthony Edwards. The first time I heard his name, checked out one of his games. And to me, he has it all right now. I don't want to say he's going to come in and be a star by saying he has it all right now, but mm-hmm. I think Anthony Edwards is the best player in this draft. It's not by far. I don't think he's far ahead of James Wiseman. I don't think he's far ahead of LaMelo. I think the only difference with this draft is these guys will – you rank them now, but it's all about fit, and it's all about if they go somewhere where they fit. Anthony Edwards could be the best player in this draft if he goes to a place where he fits their system. I could see him in Minnesota. I could see him in Golden State coming off the bench his first year. But like you said, I don't want to hold too much stock in Golden State's number two pick, because I don't think Golden State uses that number two pick. So right now we don't know who's going to get it. Yeah, I think it's gone, right along with Wiggins and maybe even a Draymond Green, depending on how much gold they're trying to strike.
Hey, you think Draymond's off the roster the way that he's hanging out with Clutch and all that stuff that you see in him with all the rumors.
He's hanging with LeBron. But the whole thing is I think he may be gone if they're going to strike gold in this trade and maybe get a Giannis, or he may even have to be gone if they get Bradley Beal, which is another big name mm-hmm. that people are talking about them going for. So I think he could be the one out, because I just don't see Klay or Steph being a part of any trade package for anybody. I don't care who it is. But, I think Anthony Edwards is the best player in the draft. I think James Wiseman is two, and I think LaMelo is three.
Okay.
That's my one, two, and three.
All right. Ewan, what about you? What's your top three? Regardless of fit, because I do agree that I think fit is important, because you could have the most talented guy, but if he goes through a logjam roster, he's not going to get any minutes. Or, for example, imagine a young guy going to Tom Thibodeau. I hope he learned his lesson, but, you know, grind your knees, Tom Thibodeau. That player's career is going to be shorthanded. So it's really, really just all about fit and coaching. But what about you, Kieran? Who's your one, two, three?
First, I think it's Edwards, too. I think he's got the most NBA ready now ability. I think he's got the most talent and skill that translates directly to the NBA. So if guys are wanting the best guy to come in, I think he's the only guy that comes in and has those super high projections. I don't think he's the only, I think he's the only guy that you expect to kind of start and score and be a star early. I don't really see that from anyone else. But two, I think is Onyeka Onyango. I love just his style of play. Because like I said earlier, this draft isn't about getting stars. And I think he's the best kind of glue guy, role player, hustle player, do-it-all type of guy in the draft. And so if that's what the draft is full of, you've got to get the best one of those. And so I love his wingspan is 7'1". He's only at 6'9". So, like, I think he's going to be a shot blocker. If Golden State keeps their pick, imagine him learning from Draymond, kind of being that small ball four, even small ball five. I like his game a lot. And then three, I think it has to be Ball. I don't see him falling out of the top three. Mm-hmm. His potential, he's got a year of pro in Australia already. He's his dad's a hothead, but he's been kind of behind the scenes the last year or two. You haven't heard a lot from him. So I like him a lot. I think Ball can translate early. The thing is, though, it's going to be fit for him. So I think he might be the third best player in the draft, but I don't know if I'm using the third pick on him because I don't know how fit works there.
I got that. All right. So one thing I do got to bring up, though, so I love you guys' list. Thanks for that breakdown, is someone that has been kind of like a star in the draft board recently, just been rising really high, is Killian Hayes. So I wanted to get your guys' thoughts. I just feel like everyone's enamored. I heard someone say, which I'm not sure, one of the guys did a podcast with Zach Lowe. He said, my thing about LaMelo is I feel people just like throwing his name around because it gets clicks, it gets listens. And he said he hasn't shown me anything less to make me lower him on my board, but people are lowering him because, you know, it's just like a good thing to talk. So now I feel like the reverse, someone, the superstar is Killian Hayes, who I am actually pretty high on, but I wanted to get your guys' honest thoughts. What do you think about him? Some of the boards, I see him going 10th to Phoenix. Sometimes I see him a little bit higher than that. I think that he could probably go a little bit higher, but I just wanted to get both of your guys' thoughts. I'll let you go first, Kieran.
I'm looking actually at the Ringer's draft board right now, and they have him going number one. So
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
So I haven't watched him a lot because he's from France, but from what I've heard, he's crafty. He's a lefty, so it's kind of I don't know if it's going to offend anybody, but I feel like lefties get more hyped just because they're left-handed.
Lucky
so
lefty,
I don't
baby,
know if
yeah.
that's a real thing or not, but as soon as you're left-handed, everyone's like, oh, this guy's a legend. This guy's can do it all. But I think it's just a different look, and so people are kind of enamored by that difference. I will say every lefty has a prettier jump shot than a righty. I don't know how it works, but I like his game. I'm not super informed about him, but he's one of those guys that, like, kind of like you were saying, he could go one, he could go 10. It's, again, with this draft, this is the biggest one. It's going to be about fit. Where does a team think that we can plug him in and he helps us get a couple more wins than we would have got if he picked somebody else?
Yeah, I feel that too. I just think that he's like the reverse LaMelo Ball. He's just like a name you sprinkle in, Killian Hayes, and then you get the clicks and the likes. So,
yeah.
What about you, Mo? What's your thoughts on him? What do you thought?
Well, first off,
French,
I took offense.
French invader.
First off, I took offense to the left-handed thing.
Oh, my bad.
I'm left-handed. You know what I mean? So I took offense to that a little bit. No, I'm just joking, Kieran. It's all good. But I get what Kieran was saying. about the left hand thing. And like, so I've read Killian's scouting report, and I've seen some of his highlights, but reading his scouting report is like, I don't want to like beat on my chest or make it about, but this was like some of the things said about him was like, when I was coming out of high school, getting looked at by some colleges was like some of the same stuff going into college said about me. Like when I would go to these camps, these workouts, it was like the same stuff said about me. He's left-handed, doesn't really like to go right too much. You know, that's said about him is he if you force him right, he's looking up for a way to get back left. And so like, I feel that 100% because that was kind of the same thing. It wasn't that I couldn't go right, but it was once I got right, I was looking for the next move to get back to my left. So he's really left-hand dominant. He's not, you know, a lot of people aren't ambidextrous, but like he does, like typical lefties, he likes to stay away from that right hand. And like, I do think he's one of those guys when the ball is in his left hand, he's one of the most unstoppable players in front of you. But once you force him right, you almost handicap his game a little bit. So I think if he's able to improve that, which he will in the NBA, I mean, these guys are 6'5", 6'6". They can all finish at the rim, both hands. Their hands are ridiculous. They can palm the ball. So he'll get used to that, especially when he starts getting in practice and getting in camp and starts going against guys and they're forcing him right in their drills and their scrimmages and he starts feeling handicapped. He's going to work on that. So I like him. I don't like him as like number one, like somebody projecting him as the number one pick. I don't love him. To me, the number one pick is the guy you love in the draft. Unless you just ultimately are looking at fit and you think, you know, he fits who has the number one pick, which would be the Minnesota Timberwolves. So if ultimately they like him as a fit in Minnesota more than any other player in the draft, and that's why they see him going number one, then okay. But I do like him around that 10, 8 to 12 range, anywhere from that. So, but it was just reading the scouting report of him loving his left hand too much. And he's not like, he can shoot, but he's not a dangerous shooter. But just coming into the league, to me, being able to shoot and having that as part of your repertoire, you will shoot from three. You're not afraid to pull the three and you can hit. You shoot at a decent percentage. Then to me, that's everything. So I got him anywhere from 8 to 12, probably one of my 8 to 12 best players also. And so, that's kind of what I think about him. But, you know, Karen did take it a little too far saying lefties are overrated a little bit, you know.
That's funny. Well, yeah, he's only a 29% three-point shooter in the EuroLeague, which we know I'm not sure, what is it, 3 or 4 feet? The three-point line is closer, more shrunk?
I think it's closer.
Well, it is. I'm just not sure the exact dimensions.
I think it's college. I think it's equivalent to college and NBA now.
They play international. Line over there, which is like, I think, like 9 inches inside the NBA line or something. So it's pretty marginal.
Oh yeah. So that's not bad at all.
Step back anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, but 29%, hopefully he'll get that up. Cause you always get that argument where it's like, oh yeah, we can fix that. You know, you can't teach athleticism, but you know, you could teach shooting. And then you have guys in the league that are, you know, it took Jason Kidd until he was 40 years old to be able to consistently hit the three. So
that's the one thing I think you can't shoot. Like, I think with people do say that you could teach. Yeah. I think it's opposite, though. Like, a guy that's athletic, he's just athletic. You can't. But I feel like a guy, if you can shoot, you can shoot. You can't really teach shooting. I mean, like you said, if you could really teach shooting, Ben Simmons would have a decent jump shot at this point.
Like, I think that's there's a mental block, though, because my rebuttal, though, is you had like Kawhi. Kawhi was basically, he just got on the court because he was just good at playing defense. Then he became kind of like a two-way player. Then now he's just like just a pure superstar. Almost like, I'm more shocked when Kawhi misses a shot than when he makes one. And I don't know. But then you bring up a good point. There's guys like Ben Simmons. So I don't know. I feel like it takes the type of player, you know, to be able to
foster.
Yeah,
but it's just like with the shooting, like you can teach, but like you can't teach Steph. Like you can't make a Steph Curry. To me, you can't make your Klay Thompsons, Ray Allens, JJ Redicks. Like that's why I say like shooting is just, sometimes I feel like it's more often than not you have it or you don't. Because like you can't make a Trae Young or a Steph Curry. I don't think you could take a guy who like 29% three-point shooter and all of a sudden he's going to turn out to be Steph Curry in the NBA. I think it's just those guys, they have it. They were blessed with jump shots, born with jump shots. So I think it's harder to teach. You could become a better shooter, but it's I guess, you know, I went to the great shooters of all time, but like these guys have been great shooters their whole life. Ray Allen has always been a great shooter. Steph Curry came in the league shooting like that. Now he got better everywhere else, what made his jumper even more deadly. But I think it's kind of hard to just make, I don't think you could really make a great shooter.
Well, one thing we have to realize is these guys haven't played since March. Yeah. We don't know what, if, how they've been in the gym, what they've been working on, all that stuff. They've had, 9 months to work on their game, get their crafts. We could have guys come in like a Killian Hayes who hasn't played since March, and he's been in the gym for 9 months working on that jumper, and he comes out and he's had nothing to do but be in the gym and shoot. So you never know when these guys are going to, if they've put the work in or if they've been sitting on their butt watching, you know, Netflix. But yeah. I don't expect many of them to, but I think that's, we can draft guys and then you're going to look at it and be like, wow, this guy fell way lower than he should have. But really that's where he should have gone, but he just put in the work all for all pandemic. And now he's elevated himself above the guys that maybe he should have, that should have been picked over him because of their college game, but now he's just better.
Yeah. That brings up a good point. We'll see though. I think it's interesting because I can't remember off the top of my head, but they were saying I don't think if it is Anthony Edwards or maybe it's Wiseman, but they were saying that there's just some guys that they were just so surprised about the type of the lack of in-game shape that they kept themselves in when they ended up seeing these guys. So, but that's a good point because there isn't much going on, especially too because these kids are just college kids. It's not like when the NFL had to take their hiatus, the team would send them money to get equipment, right? And a lot of these guys, technically, you know, the really good ones have agents when they're not supposed to. But for some of these guys, they just recently got an agent, you know, and then that guy has to front all the money for them. And usually, you know, how the agents work is they're basically going to feed, work out, and train these guys until the draft happens. But then now that got extended. So these agents that maybe budgeted, you know, oh, I'm going to do this for a couple months now. It was almost half a year. So I think that there's just so many layers and dynamics to this, which is really interesting. And I think that's why a lot of people are saying this is a weak draft class because, you know, it is the COVID. It is the weird 2020 year. So that's why everyone's saying to, oh, you know, the Dodgers, that piece of metal wasn't that great. Or like, oh, whoever wins the NBA championship, that wasn't really that one. So, oh, whoever gets drafted first in this one, who cares? It's like the pandemic draft, though. So. Which I think we got to get rid of that stigma because I think in a couple years, not even in a couple years, I think once we put this behind us, everyone's going to look back and be like, wow, that was a tough championship or wow, that was a pretty good draft class. So,
yeah, I think it's just out of the normal. The out of the ordinary is it's weird for everybody. The whole year has been weird for everybody. But ultimately, like, I don't think there's no asterisk behind anybody who won a championship from from whoever wins the Super Bowl this year to the Lakers, to the Dodgers, to the Lightning. Like, everybody's had to endure life-changing things. And I think, you know, you want to factor and say, oh, well, they're not playing in front of fans and things like that. But majority of these players play for fans. Like, how often, you know, there's JV basketball games getting more crowds than what these guys were getting, you know, with fans. So a lot of these guys do play for fans. So I don't want to use that as a factor. Well, there's no fans. It might have helped some teams. It might have hurt some teams. But ultimately, everybody endured the same pandemic. Everybody's under the same rules, the same or lack thereof of movement and being able to do what they want and move freely. And so the what they don't factor for a lot of these guys is the mental on everything. Like, this has been mentally it's a mentally tough time for everybody, you know, making a whole change on life. So, you know, Josh, like you said, I think you will look back and see how tough it really was, because once everybody overcomes this pandemic and life comes back to any type of normalcy where we could just move and do whatever we want, which may not be for 2 to 3 years, could be in 6 months. We don't know, you know, it's kind of changes by the daily, but I do think when everybody does in 2 to 3 years, look back at those championships, I think everybody's going to sit there and be like, you know, that was definitely tough. Everything they endured was tough. Taking a break in the middle of seasons or baseball not starting till later. You know, hockey took a break and then started and restarted and things like that. That's not easy because you're also in the middle of you taking a break and restarting. they're focused on their families and making sure everybody's safe, healthy, things like that. So I do think it was tougher. I don't want to deem it as, oh, this was the toughest championship to win for any major sporting event. But I will say this was a lot tougher than people want to give credit for. And I think it's because, you know, some of the teams that have won, the Dodgers, there's not a lot of Dodgers fans outside, like LA and the West Coast. Mm-hmm. They love the Dodgers, but people love to hate on the Dodgers also. LeBron won a championship. You either love LeBron or you hate him. There's no in between. So, you know, I think the Lightning winning, just things like that, it kind of makes it where everybody's like, oh, they wouldn't have won without this. They got to skip out on this and miss out on that. So that's why I think that comes. But I think a couple years from now, we'll look at this whole time and from the draft class to everything and see how tough it really was, especially for these draft players. Like, they don't get the combine that they wanted. They don't get the workouts that they wanted. Teams don't get to look at them like that. And they're just mm-hmm. now looking at them. What, the draft is what, Wednesday? And they're just now taking a look at these guys, you know, in the past couple of weeks. So I do think it's a lot tougher. And I think, you know, when we look at this draft class, even 2-3 years from now, you're going to be like, yeah, they were a lot better than we thought. But with such a hiatus from March to November, having to remember who these guys were and not seeing, nobody's fresh in our mind from the NCAA tournaments. And that's where guys really make names for themselves. So I think that's the biggest part that hurt this draft class, is not seeing the conference championship, the conference tournaments, and the NCAA tournament, because some of these guys would have solidified themselves and some of these guys would have made names for themselves. They would have been second round picks. Now they're mid to late first round picks. Some of these guys that were mid to late first round picks could have became lottery picks. So without having that aspect of college basketball, I think that's what changes. It makes people think the draft is so weak, because that's when all eyes are on college basketball, is during conference tournament time and March Madness. And March Madness. One time everybody watches college basketball.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, so yo, thank you guys for coming on. We're wrapping up. I just got one more basic question before we go. And also, thank you for picking up the Lightning. I totally forgot about that. But we also forgot, we got to give the credit to the ladies for Mop and Chimp Champagne, Seattle. Shout out to the Seattle Storm. I just want to get your guys' thoughts. So speaking of baseball, the NBA regular season, their idea, their pitch is that you know, the Sacramento Kings, since you're going to be in the West Coast and you play the Lakers, you might as well play your 4-game against the Lakers right now. And, you know, kind of like a baseball series. And then also you need to go play the other teams in California, just get it over with. So I'm actually pretty excited. That would be pretty cool. It'd be like, it'd be basically a mini playoff series in the regular season. That's not as intense, but you'd play the teams in your conference, whatever it is, 3 or 4 times, depending on the shortened schedule. Then you go to the East and you play them once, but you'd play all your East teams. You know, because you're already there. So I thought that was pretty cool. Going to be pretty interesting. What's your guys' thoughts? Because then we get things like, you know, Philly versus the Bucks 4 times in a row, or you get Boston versus, you know, Milwaukee, that kind of stuff. So I just wanted to get your thoughts about what do you guys think of that baseball style series?
I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. You never know. They're kind of doing that with the NCAA this year too. They're going to have kind of bubbles and they're going to play a ton of games really quick. I saw that they're going to have 41 teams playing a bunch of games for like on the East Coast. I think they just released that. So it'll be an interesting different look. Well, I think it'll be, I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical because I don't know if teams are going to treat it like a playoff series or not, or like how it's going to work based on players' mentality of just kind of going all in on scouting reports and all that. It should be interesting. My question, though, is where's Toronto going to play at? If they're going to stay in Toronto or they're going to try and move somewhere.
Louisville Raptors, they say it.
So that's what I think is going to be the question.
Yeah, that's actually going to be pretty interesting because that's one advantage that Toronto did have, is that people had to go through that long international airport. Even though it's not an international flight, you had to go through that international customs and all that boarding. Mm-hmm. That's why people hated having to play Toronto in the playoffs. They're just like, oh, this is a drag. More recently, now that they switched to the 2-2-1-1-1-1, before back then, they wouldn't mind when it was like 2-3-3-2. But what about you, Mo? What's your thoughts?
So it's unique. It's different. I'm not the biggest fan of it. Just especially like the way you broke it down and brought to like the California team. So like, I think that damages like some money in the NBA, because do people really want to watch the Lakers and the Kings four nights in a row or four games in five nights? No. Does LeBron really want to play the Kings four times in a row? Like, you know, and I think that's gonna, I think if you change that, I think that's going to have a bigger effect on some of these teams' records because, you know, like you might have one night where the late game is the Lakers and Kings for the next 2 to 3 nights or something like that. But then you also have Philly and Boston. That could be great. But then like Philly plays the Hornets, you know, three or four times in a row. And it kind of becomes like, I think that takes an effect on some of these really good teams. Cause are they going to really care? Like, is Brooklyn really going to care by their second win about playing the Knicks two more times, you know, and things like that. And I think your stars are going to get tired of just playing the same team. And with baseball, the difference is you switch pitchers each game during those series. So there's something different to prepare for, you know, in baseball with switching the pitchers, you know, they have the pitching advantage. They use their lesser pitcher while we got our star pitcher, you know, in tonight's matchup where in basketball, it's the same teams going mano y mano four nights in a row. So it's unique, it's different. And I would actually like to see it just to see if like my theory and, you know, Kieran said it too, is like, are these guys going to be as interested and as entertained having to play each other multiple nights in a row? And then come playoff time, let's say the Lakers and the Warriors, they're both in California, so they end up playing four nights in a row. They might play, what, six or seven times during the regular season? I mean, baseball, well, if they're in your division, and I know you'll play them like six, seven, eight times, and then you're going to go already play the team six, seven, eight times, and now you're playing them in a seven-game series in the playoffs. So I think that'll have a bigger factor on the ultimate outcome of the season. But if they're going to do it like that, I feel like that should be a possible, if it's successful in the NBA's eyes, then that should be a possible permanent adjustment, you know, and things like that. But I don't think it should be something they play with. People don't like it. I mean, you play with it this year, people don't like it, throw it out the window, and it'll never be an option again. We'll just figure out how to get through COVID. But for me, like if I was a superstar and we're going to play like the Kings for four nights in a row, or I'm the, you know, Milwaukee Bucks, and we got to play Orlando the next four games. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of that because Orlando could sweep them, or they also could win the first two games and come out 2-2 just because they got unentertained. They blew Orlando out for two games, and then, you know, now they got unentertained with having to play Orlando two more nights in a row, or like I said, four out of five nights, however they do it. So I love to see it just to see if it's something they'll keep or throw away. But I think ultimately it would turn out to be a bad idea for ratings. You know, people aren't going to want to watch the Lakers or Kings multiple nights in a row. You could have a lot of good matchups that could be playoff series type, but then you also could have those bad matchups where the top team in the conference plays the worst team in the conference four nights in a row, and you don't really care.
All right. Yeah, I love you guys. Thank you for breaking that down and sharing your thoughts. I agree, it's going to be on effort. I'm a little bit more bullish on this than you guys. I think it has the potential to end up being pretty good, especially because if you know, hey, this is a team I'm probably going to see in the playoffs. Because when you play a playoff series, a player once said that when you play a regular season game, if you go up to your coach at halftime and you ask him, hey, what's my defensive assignment? He's not going to care because it's the second night of a back-to-back after you just got done playing Denver. Now you're playing Utah. But they're saying in a playoff series, you know who you're guarding and you know the guy's counters to the counter to the counter. So I think that'd be really interesting to kind of get a sneak preview, because usually you play a team and you're like, you cross it off the calendar and you're like, okay, we lost, but we'll get them in, you know, we'll get them in a couple months, or we'll get them in 2 months when we see them. But now it's like you can get them next night. So I'm a little bit bullish, but I agree, it's all on effort. So we'll see how much these guys take it serious. But hey, Mo, Kieran, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your guys' draft expertise. If there's anything you guys wanted to say or shout out real quick before we cut it off.
Just, you know, shout out to the Off the Ball Network and everybody a part of the Off the Ball family. Hey, Josh, I appreciate you for having me on.
Of course.
And, you know, I got some things coming in the future. So follow me on social media, Up in Flames Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow the Up in Flames Sports Podcast on almost any platform that there is to get one. So definitely check it out. And like I said, Josh, I appreciate you for having me on.
Of course. No worries. Kieran, the floor is yours.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate having her on. It was fun to finally connect after trying to connect before. But this is good talking to you and Mo. And you guys can follow me too on Twitter, Kieran Pruitt. Yeah, just looking forward to contributing more on Off the Ball Podcast Network and all that stuff. So it's been good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I'll put their links on the bottom. But hey, thank you guys for coming on. Excited to be talking the draft and tweeting with you guys later. But see you guys on the next show.